Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend. Coming up, W. Kamau Bell and Kate Schatz tell us about their new anti-racist activity book, Do the Work.
Like, what I've been thinking about a lot recently is the making the revolution irresistible. I think that's what I'm trying to wait to, like, look, I know we don't want to talk about this stuff, but we have to talk about this stuff, or all of American civilization collapses into the ground. So, like, why don't we try to figure out a different way to talk about it?
But first, this week was gloriously filled with some high-profile, low-stakes celebrity gossip, and I want to get into it. With us this week, we have Christina Tucker. She's a Philadelphia-based writer and co-host of the Auto Straddle podcast, Wait, Is This a Date? Christina, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
Also here is Margaret Willison. She's a Boston-based culture writer and podcaster with Not Sorry Productions. Margaret, welcome back.
Hi, Greta.
Okay, so we have to start with this cup of tea that just keeps on giving, because there is a film that comes out later this month. It's called Don't Worry, Darling. It premiered at the Venice Film Festival last weekend. And wow, wow, wow. I just like don't really know where to begin with this one. Either you have been like inundated with content about this all week, or you have no idea what I'm talking about. So in the interest of sort of finding that middle ground, if you haven't already been following it, here's the 101 version. The film is directed by Olivia Wilde. Her boyfriend is Harry Styles. He's also in it. So is Florence Pugh and Chris Pine. It's a hell of a cast. It's extremely possible that the movie is terrible. And on top of that, at least based on how all of these people behaved at the press junket, it seems like they may all hate each other. Harry has said some really unnuanced things about the film while Chris just like stares into the void. Let's listen to that.
You know, my favorite thing about the movie is like it feels like a movie. It feels like a real, like, you know, go to the theater film movie that, you know, you kind of, the reason why you go to watch something on the big screen.
It's giving I didn't do the reading in class and I have to say something.
God. So, yeah, this whole situation has just like become the source of a number of excellent memes and rumors and jokes all week. There is so much going on here. Christina, what is your favorite part?
This is like the exact kind of celebrity gossip slash drama I live for. It like is, it has like almost no stakes. Like, who cares if these people that I don't know don't like each other? Like, it doesn't really matter in any way, shape, or form. But it also is still something that I get to like watch and participate in and like make up my own narratives in my mind and just have like a fun time online, which I think everyone can agree is a perishingly rare thing that happens. It's pretty rare that I log on and see a lot of activity and say, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
So I have to give it up to them for giving me that experience and for giving me photos of, you know, Chris Pine being an Instagram mom and taking photos of Florence Pugh like she's going to prom. It's just really, really good stuff.
I just really want to salute the men for becoming involved, because for a long time the narrative was like Florence and Olivia don't like each other, and then it was just like, I was like, oh, like, can I lean into this gossip, or is it just like we're pitting two women against each other? And I had to have mixed feelings about it. But suddenly there's a Zapruder film where maybe Harry Styles spit on Chris Pine, and just like a gorgeous array of Chris Pine disassociating at various different press events. And just, I was like, finally, now it's fun again. The men are here. It's wacky. I don't have to have moral complications about it. And then also the other best thing, when the men got involved, amazing. The next level thing, though, was when the stylists got involved.
The stylist was really kind of like the chef's kiss on top of it all.
Yeah.
Like, that was a gift I couldn't even imagine that I deserved.
Oh, my God. You just, and you have to be so online yes. to know this information. Yes. Because not only do you have to know who Olivia Wilde and Florence Pugh's stylists are, or pay attention to people who might know that or who might know yeah. people who know that, you also have to know, like, one stylist, Olivia Wilde, says something that's like pretty obviously about the drama, which is like there's like
the story.
More sides.
The story.
There's there are always more sides mm-hmm. to the story. And it's like, yeah. Okay, stylist. But the important caption is that Florence Pugh's stylist captioned her like carousel of Pugh's looks on Instagram, Miss Flow. Right?
Yep.
And you're like, oh, cute little nickname. What you don't yep. know
direct reference.
Is that is not a cute little yep. nickname. That is a direct reference to honestly the most embarrassing thing to come out of this, which is a video Olivia Wilde made for Shia LaBeouf, who she claims to have fired from the film, actually begging him to stay, wherein she seems to say she can sort of manage, quote unquote, Miss Flo.
Yeah.
When I got to that comment, the way I gasped.
You know, it's funny because when I first saw the comment about Miss Flo, I was skimming intensely and thought that it was a weird allusion to Olivia being very crabby because she was on her period.
That is so funny. I mean,
so I was relieved that it wasn't that, but yeah, the pettiness does seem to abound.
It's the tone of like we're the adults in the room, you yeah. and me, Shia LaBeouf. We're gonna manage Florence Pugh, exceptionally accomplished and talented yeah. actress, because she's the one being difficult again, Shia mm-hmm. LaBeouf. Mm-hmm. So just not a good look.
So how much of y'all unpacked the whole spitting situation? Like, do you think Harry spat on Chris?
There's no unpacking to do. The video clearly shows him spitting. Okay.
I have watched the slowed down version, and I was like, I guess in like what some would call a technical or real way, he did not spit on that man. But emotionally, he did. And that's really all that matters
okay,
to me.
Okay, so there is an emotional truth is what we'll
yes,
say.
That's all I ever want is the emotional truth.
Right, that's all that really matters.
Yeah, it's a real win for fact-based journalism, we'll just say that.
Oh, something I'm fully supportive of.
Let's be clear. So this movie is set to release September 23rd. Are y'all going to go see it?
I like have yes. to now, which is... I mean, I was kind of always going to see it because this drama has been
same.
Brewing for like almost a full year at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So like it has had me in a chokehold. And, you know, the least I can do is, you know, toss my, I don't know, $16 at it and sit down and look at something that Harry Styles described as a movie.
A real movie.
It's a real movie, Christina.
A real movie. It's, and, you know, it's the kind of thing you want to go to the theater for. And I'll go. Why not?
Which reminds me of the best meme that I have seen come out of this is someone took that Harry Styles mm-hmm. quote and they put it over the footage of the Nicole Kidman
yes.
AMC Theaters pre-roll. And that is just art. Like, that's a movie. Like, that meme is what I go to the movie theater to see.
Okay, so in other entertainment news, the new Lord of the Rings show dropped on Amazon Prime last week. It's called Rings of Power, and the casting is way more diverse than the original Lord of the Rings. And racist people are really upset about it, perhaps unsurprisingly. There is a claim that it is not historically accurate, which does seem a bit ironic to me, given this is a world with dragons in it. Christina.
Both ironic and also specious.
So, yeah, Christina, are you a Lord of the Rings fan, right?
I'm a Lord of the Rings fan. I am a Black woman. I'm really, like, looking at this drama. And it is that kind of... It is one of those things where I'm just like, yeah, guys, you're being dumb. Of course, these people are being dumb and they're not taking this in good faith. And they're going to make all of the excuses that they want about Tolkien's intent and the way that the books were written and what it doesn't matter.
No,
it's made up. He made up the damn world. We're making up new stuff. It's fine. Everybody take a breath. It simply can't be this deep. I just can't imagine having this many passionate feelings about anything.
Oh, that's not true, Christina. We were just talking about the Don't Worry, Darling drama.
Celebrity gossip aside.
Yeah, it just seems so shocking that anyone would like give that much of a fuck about, like, can't we just have nice things?
God.
You know?
I truly wish it seemed shocking.
I mean, it is the least shocking part, I will say, of the whole thing.
It's frustrating, but that's an obvious word to use, too.
Yeah, deeply frustrating.
Yeah. It's just a lot of people not unpacking the distinction between, like, well, this seems like it's not going to be exactly the same as the thing I love. And therefore, I am going to make, again, racist and specious assertions. You saw the same thing happen when the diverse casting was announced for the first season of Bridgerton.
Yes.
And I think there's one sense where people who are accustomed to consuming culture without thinking about the implications of it for the wider world are like, ew, gross. You're getting worldly implications into my escapist fantasy. And it's like, yeah, unfortunately for you, those worldly complications are there for most of us all of the time. Right. And in the hands of thoughtful creators and filmmakers and storytellers, it's a wildly enriching thing, right? Not a like, oh no, like this isn't fun anymore. There are brown people here, which is a real yikes sentiment. It's just one of those things where it's like, how do you not hear how that sounds to you?
It is, as we say in the biz, a real rum tum bummer.
Yeah, it's a huge fucking rum-tum bummer. So, Christina, are you watching the show?
So, I have not watched it yet, exclusively due to the fact that it is going to be a household show, and one of the members of my household was felled with the COVID and has been in isolation. Now that the home can be together again, we will be diving in to all of the things. Very excited.
Cool. Margaret, have you seen it?
I haven't, but frankly, knowing how many people are bummed out about it makes me so much more interested in watching it. Now that I know there are people I can upset by being enthusiastic about it, I'm just like, that sounds like
fun. Yeah, that is a lot more fun. Okay, so the other thing I want to talk about is a little close to political news for my general preference, but stick with me here. As you know, the FBI is investigating former President Donald Trump. That's a name I have not said on the show in a very long time. A federal judge granted Trump's request for what is called a special master to help sift through documents. And that is the phrase that I would really like to focus on, because I just am fascinated by the idea of a special master. The New York Times just did a great little explainer about it. They describe a special master as someone a judge can appoint when a case raises a complex problem that requires specific expertise, and says they can perform tasks that are so time consuming that a judge or magistrate judge doesn't have the bandwidth to handle them. So this got us thinking, like, yes, I get they're, you know, occasionally used in super complicated legal situations, but what if I had a special master to, like, help me clean out my pantry or figure out meal planning or something? So I don't know. I was thinking that it would be kind of fun to ask y'all if there was, like, a specific avenue of your life where you think you could really use the help of a special master. Margaret, what do you think?
Well, I have crippling executive dysfunction. So really narrowing this down to just one was, you know, both extremely hard because there are a lot of areas this would be applicable, and extremely hard because narrowing a list down to the number one most prioritized
thing is actually a thing you could use a special
master
for.
It's a thing you can't really do if you have executive dysfunction. So what I brought it down to was two finalists. One was just like someone to like go through my mail all the time, shred all of the credit card offers I haven't requested. They're like big mailers and they're like floppy. And it's like, if I just lackadaisically feed it into the shredder, the shredder gets jammed and then I need a special master to unjam the shredder. However, it is now September. The seasons are changing and much more pressing is like, I need a special master to rotate my summer clothes out and my autumn clothes in.
What I was thinking. What I need is the special master to tell me the point in the weather where like I can do that without having regrets, you know?
Ooh, that would be huge.
Christina, what do you think?
I mean, I think I also, much like Margaret, went right to like, ooh, if someone could just go through like the papers. There's just like the papers that I have.
Which is funny because that's what they do, is the documents, you know?
I want to keep them, you know, where they're best aligned. And I do want to say, like, can you just like look at this? Like, what is this? Like, why do, like, I have it, but like, do I, need to have this. And similarly, if you could also just, like, if someone could just manage my money for a little bit so I don't have to do that would be incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know that I, as a 33-year-old adult, am responsible enough to have my own, you know, bank account information. So if someone just wanted to, like, take over for that, like, for, like, a 3-month period and just kind of get me back on track, that would be incredible. Mm.
I mean, Christina, it sounds like what you actually want is a conservatorship.
I do, actually. I do.
Honestly?
I don't want to be in charge of it.
You know, or just parents, you know, but like parents who just did shit for you instead of like imbue moral fiber into you or whatever.
Yeah, I do love the idea that we're all like, ooh, I simply need an adult.
Yeah, that is pretty funny.
I do.
Could I just get like one grown up?
I'm not qualified to fill that role in my life.
I get like a single grown up, please.
It's funny because like I think of myself as like very like independent and highly functioning. However, like, yeah, if someone could just help me make some decisions on a daily basis, that would be super. Like, what should I make for dinner? I don't know. You tell me.
Greta, we are independent and highly functioning. It's not our fault. Capitalism was never designed to have one person have to do all of this nonsense. Just a 40-hour work week and the basic responsibilities of being a grown adult in this world, they simply aren't compatible.
I can say, as a person who was like semi-recently laid off, that like also turns out being unemployed and having responsibilities, also not compatible. Turns out responsibilities simply aren't compatible, no matter how much time you have on your hands. Oh. Turns out.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah,
tough but fair. Yeah.
This is us uniting in our independent, highly competent way to create anti-capitalist change.
Yeah, we're just going to be special masters for each other.
Wow. That was really beautiful.
We got there.
I'm like a little touched, honestly.
Christina, Margaret, thank you both so much. You're my favorite special masters.
Aww.
Oh, you're ours, Greta. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. This was an absolute delight.
In just a minute, W. Kamau Bell and Kate Schatz tell us about their anti-racist activity book, Do the Work.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max. And listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Our next guests are two of my favorite humans. They've each been on the show several times over the years, and they are super delightful, radical people. They just teamed up to write a book called Do the Work, an anti-racist activity book. They are Kate Schatz and W. Kamau Bell, and they are here now. Hey, you two.
Hi.
Hello.
So there's like a very extended subtitle of this book. It says it's an anti-racist activity book for all the people overwhelmed by racial injustice and white supremacy in America who have taken some action and know they can do more, but don't always know what to do or how to do it, or are afraid of getting it wrong or not knowing enough and are left wondering, what do I do? Which I feel like sort of says it all. But in case people are still like unclear what the point of this book is, Kamau, what's the deal?
Well, yeah, first of all, I think the subtitle maybe is my fault because I went to the Fiona Apple School of Titles. I think there's a lot of great books about anti-racism out there and ways to be an anti-racist, but we really, as parents, we really wanted to lead people through by the hand the way that like those great Brain Quest books do for kids over the summer. Like, all right, let's just try to start you somewhere so your brain doesn't turn into mush and slowly build you up to a place where you can complete this work. So that's really where it's came from.
Well, and you even say, too, that the idea is you're kind of bridging the gap between like the people who are buying the books and hopefully reading the books and then like actually taking action.
Yeah. Yes. As we say, no bad ideas in a brainstorm. There's lots of ways to create an anti-racist society. And this has as many ways we could come up with in 176 pages.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So this book has all sorts of activities you learn about, which indigenous groups used to live on the land. A lot of us live on now. There's an exercise exploring different kinds of privilege. There's like an image search thing where you can find all of the items in a picture that were invented by Black people that most of us didn't learn about in school. It's packed with information, but it never feels dense. And it's a book about white supremacy, but it also manages to be funny and fun. Kate, in the intro, you say We will definitely end racism by telling jokes and coloring. I think that is like sort of a joke, but like many jokes also carries a lot of truth. What do you think, Kate?
I mean, exactly that. Well, I think we took a lot of risks with this book. We're walking a lot of fine lines. Like it's a funny activity book about white supremacy. Like how the fuck are we going to pull that off? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just swore on the podcast.
That's totally cool. You're allowed.
You know, both of us are using humor in different ways, you know, to get at something that is deadly serious, because humor is a powerful tool. It's also one of the most effective ways that we can connect with each other and engage people around content that people don't really want to engage with.
Yeah. Kamau, it seems like, I mean, as a comedian, you've spent a lot of time thinking about sort of like how to, I don't know, how to make this stuff palatable. Is that a fair way of even putting that?
Yeah, I mean, the quote I've been thinking about a lot recently is the making the revolution irresistible. I think that's what I'm trying to wait to like, look, I know we don't want to talk about this stuff, but we have to talk about this stuff or the all of American civilization collapses into the ground. So like, why don't we try to figure out a different way to talk about it? I think about like a lot of kids entertainment does a great job of this. Like, you know, we have a whole section on apology about how to make a good apology and how to make amends. And Daniel Tiger figured that out in one sentence. Saying I'm sorry is the first step. Then how can I help? So like for me, it's like putting that sort of kid content brain on and going like, this is things we as parents, we understand that a kid song can sort of translate a lot of information very quickly. How can we sort of translate a lot of information very quickly and effectively about anti-racism?
Is there like an ideal age range you pictured for this book or is it really just kind of like anybody?
Yeah, I think we were very clear that like as much as these workbooks read like they're for kids, adult, it's more, and some people are like, oh, you, this would be perfect for children. No, it's perfect for you. It's perfect for you. Like, it's like, stop trying
like,
to pass
oh,
the
I would
anti-racism.
Love to hand this off to someone else.
Yeah. Can I hand the, stop trying to hand off the anti-racism work to the next generation. We need to do the work so they don't have to do as much work.
Right. Another thing I find really remarkable about this book is how much you really emphasize, I think, kind of speaking of apologies, like how important it is to say it's okay to not know stuff. It's okay that you still have room to learn and grow. Kate, can you talk a little bit about like how important that is, especially, you know, as white people in this world these days?
Yeah, absolutely. And I what I would say to that is that I think that for a certain type of white people, and the type that I mean is the progressive, liberal, highly educated ones who want to be anti-racist and, you know, want to be good people, and see ourselves on the right side of the history and real know-it-alls, and we don't like to be wrong. And I think that there's a way in which we forget how to learn and we forget how to be curious, and that a lot of people can feel really, when they encounter new information or something that they didn't know, especially when it's around history, like maybe something that you didn't realize or didn't know, or you never learned about, there can be this kind of defensive shame response of, I didn't know that, you know, I'm not a good person. Mm-hmm. You know, or the instinct is to just act like you already know everything. So I think with this book, we wanted to make it feel good and okay to be curious and to learn new things. And again, it doesn't mean you're horrible. It means you have a really great opportunity to do some really good new deep learning.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you talk super clearly about how this book is meant largely for white people. And you know, even just as you say that you're describing sort of like the well-intentioned, like well-educated liberal white folks who like often think that they are, you know, do you ever wonder like if a book like this just ends up being an echo chamber, or do you feel genuinely like there's enough work to do in this space that like it still is making an impact?
I mean, I would say this, that like, if it is in the echo chamber is like, we can scream louder in this echo chamber. So I feel like, I mean, really one of the things that me and Kate really prioritize in this book is the idea of like giving people homework. And I do that with United Shades too, like really making sure that like, you don't just watch the show and go, man, that story's real sad. What can I invite you to do in the real world that can help make this better? So, you know, so I think that in the book, it's no different than the Brain Quest books. There's actual homework in there. Now, if you buy the book and don't do it, that's on you. Like, you know, like, so at the end, there's a certificate you can fill out to say you did the work, but it's all a joke. Cause if America's still racist, then the work's not done. And we're really saying, for me, like, this is no different than reading a book about working out. That's not actually the work. You actually have to do the workout after you finish the book, or as you know, it can't just do, you can't just do working out while you read the workout book.
Yeah. And, you know, the echo chamber is just ideas, right? And so the whole point of this book is, okay, here's a bunch of ideas, but it, like Kamau said, now here's what you're going to do about it. So great. I'm happy to, again, yell louder into the echo chamber and have part of that be, now get out of the echo chamber into the world and actually do something.
Yeah. So you two, how long have you two been friends?
We were put together by an anti-racist lab that's funded by George Soros. So we actually, this is the first time we've ever been in the same room together.
Yeah. Nice well, together. In that case.
we both live in the Bay Area. We're both parents. We're both like engaged in activism, Kate at different levels than I do. But, and we both are in this sort of like media industry. So there's this idea of like, you hear about each other and then you sort of cross and then you're in the same room as each other. And then it's sort of naturally like, oh, I finally met you now. Let's be friends and let's do things together. And so, what was that, 2014, I guess it was, that we've been in each other's lives since then.
Oh, that's really cool. So what was it like to work on this book together? I mean, I imagine you both kind of had to confront some internal biases of your own as you're working on it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a really relaxing time. It was 2020
yes,
or 2021.
Yeah, totally.
A lot of that, the majority of the dialogue in the book is us having a real-time conversation and sitting and working on the book together and really talking through all of these ideas and having a conversation that we then kind of just transcribed and edited for clarity. But it's really what we were talking about, again, during that really intense time. And I mean, absolutely, there were like confronting our internal biases and assumptions and learning new things and, you know, really kind of grappling with these ideas that we didn't come up with also. Mm-hmm. You know, we did nothing in here. This anti-racist ideas, these theories, these concepts, this is not our groundbreaking work by any means. We're building off of years of scholarship and activism from so many great minds. We just were really trying to do this process of how do we kind of take this content and find new delivery methods for new audiences that really need it.
So the book came out in July. You've gone on tour for it. What was feedback like as you did that?
I mean, I have to say that when you said this book came out in July, it just took me like good 5 seconds to remember what month it actually is right now.
I was like, is that a long time ago? Is that
kind of?
Is that now? Is that soon?
Yeah, who can say?
I mean, we were in DC at an event at the MLK Library. And afterwards, a woman comes up to me, a black woman, and she's like, so is this book for white folks? And we had talked about it during the event. And I was like, well, it is definitely a 101 approach to racism. And we all know that that means that white folks are the ones who are going to benefit most from that. And she's like, but okay, but is it, so it's for white folks. I was like, well, not everybody starts in the same place. We all come from different, so it doesn't necessarily mean that it's only for white folks. But she's like, but it's generally for white folks. I go, yeah, sure. She goes, I am tired of having to explain racism to white people. I go, great, you don't have to anymore. That's what this book is for. Send them a link to this book. And she was like, and suddenly all of the sort of the anger, she's like, she sort of realized, oh yeah, that's right. Like, I get the place where she was coming from. I'm tired of being a black person who's living my life and having a white person tap me on the shoulder and go, explain Juneteenth to me. And you're like, I just heard about that yesterday or whatever it is. And so the idea being that, like, we're the people who are the professional explainers of racism to white people. You shouldn't have to do that job. And I recognize that that's not a job you signed up for.
That's amazing. I love it. I can't wait to spend more time with it. Kamau, Kate, thank you both so much for chatting with me.
Oh, thank you, Greta.
Good to talk to you again.
All right, that's it for today's episode. Thank you, as always, for listening along. As you may know, Book Club is back for the fall semester. We are doing Gabrielle Zevin's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow this month. It's great. You're probably going to love it. If you've already read it, we would love to hear from you so we can play your voicemail during our panel chat later this month. It is never too soon to send in a voicemail. You can do it by recording yourself on your phone and then emailing the file to nerdoutpodcast@gmail.com. Maggie Civet builds our newsletter every week. Our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak, and the show is produced by me and Anna Bauman. We will see you next week.
It feels like a movie. It feels like a real, like, you know, go to the theater film movie.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.